Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war. Okay, my friends, the time is at hand. It's time for you to get on board the anti-prohibition bandwagon. I just returned from Hartford, Connecticut, where I attended the Illicit Drugs Burden and Policy Symposium, presented by the City of Hartford, Connecticut, hosted by Trinity College, and sponsored by Aetna Insurance Foundation. We started our coverage with the Century of Lies program, which features a speech given by Mr. Eric Sterling, the president of the Criminal Justice Policy Foundation. Some people are already calling this the best speech ever given in support of ending drug prohibition. If you would like to hear that speech by Mr. Sterling or any of our more than 150 radio programs, please visit our website, drugtruth.net. Now let's get down to business reporting on the Hartford Convention. I'm going to try to give you a balanced summary on this program. First up, we'll hear from Robert Painter. He's a surgeon, also the minority leader of the City of Hartford, and one of the organizers of this event.
This is step one of what we hope will be an ongoing process using the information that we have gained here today. We need to provide facts to people who have sometimes mistaken ideas about drugs, the specific drugs, mistaken ideas about what's already being done, a failure to understand other people's viewpoints. And in this conference, we have such a wide variety of viewpoints. We have people from all walks of life. And I would entreat you to put aside your dogma, put aside your personal philosophy, and open your ears and listen to what everyone has to say. Because at the end of the 2 days, we hope to bring together some commonalities, some thoughts that all of us can agree on that will make life better for our citizens with relation to this drug burden that we bear in the city.
Next, we hear from the mayor of Hartford, Connecticut, Mr. Eddie Perez.
So many folks get caught up in the cycle of drugs and the cycle of poverty and the cycle of despair, and as a result, they don't participate on all the good things that our society has to offer, and don't end up being responsible citizens as a result, and become problem citizens rather than productive citizens. This weekend's dialogue is an opportunity to discuss the progress that can be measured first in not only reducing crime, but more importantly, improving the quality of life for Hartford residents, and by providing opportunities for those individuals who want to stop using drugs and want to look for other options, including those folks that end up selling drugs as a way of surviving in our society. We all know that there's not one answer and that there are no easy answers. But just like fighting a disease, it is often a combination of strategies and goodwill from individuals that will help solve our problem. Cities like Hartford cannot do it alone. Recently, myself, Mayor DeStefano, Mayor Fabrizi, all wrote a joint letter to Governor Rell months ago requesting that the state provide us the resources for programs that would increase opportunities for individuals who are coming out of penal institutions into our cities with really no option, no support, and only an invitation to come and become a problem for our community and revisit the prison system once again. You know, there are about 1,000 individuals that return back to Hartford annually with no options, and most of them have had experience and encounters with drug, either as sellers, users, and in most cases as both. Things like transitional housing, job programs, reentry programs are the core of success in order that these individuals reenter at least in a positive way, so that they would have a chance to understand what it's what responsibility they have in order to be good citizens of this community, and we have a great deal to go to get there. Again, I want to congratulate Dr. Painter for he's worked on this probably about a year and a half now in terms of trying to pull off this conference, and it's individuals like that, individual effort like that to get energy going, to get the discussion going that we need. I also hope that out of this weekend, there will be what we hope to connect with efforts at the state and national and be part of those solutions. I always look for the small baby steps. So don't think of the big dreams. Think of some of the implementation stuff that we have to do locally and improve what we're already doing on the ground.
Now let us hear from Marilda Garanda, president of Aetna Foundation.
When Dr. Painter came to me about this conference, I was absolutely delighted, and we really are honored at Aetna that we are your financial partner, or one of your financial partners on this. It is very important. One thing that I want to talk about, as you set out to look at, as the mayor said, what we call at Aetna the low-hanging fruit, sort of the quick fixes, but also the back burner issues and the issues that sometimes we don't, in our daily life, don't get to talk about because we're just so concerned. Whether you're a police officer, a social worker, whatever you are doing, and you're in the trenches on the drug war, you have so much to do today that it's really hard to think about the root causes. I have suffered from long-term chronic depression all my life. As a child, I lived through a war in my country. I am Cuban, and I lived through the revolution in the late 50s. And as a result of that and what happened after the war and the migration and all of that, and genetic, certainly, background in my family, since I was in college, I have suffered from a deep chronic depression. That may come as a surprise to some of you who know me well, because my natural personality is sort of the opposite of that. But the reason I raise that is because when you scratch the surface, but just a little bit, in terms of drug use, you find mental health issues very quickly. We know, for example, that something like 75% of alcoholics are chronically depressed. And the issue of self-medication is an important one. And it is something that cannot be overlooked. In a conference like this, we need to think about containing the problem that we have and resolving it. But I think it's very hard to do that if we do not address what is the foundational issue for a lot of the people who are addicted to whatever the substance is. I always consider myself to be just so lucky and blessed because I have had a family who, they've been there with me, they've taken care of me. I've had health insurance. I've had access to good counselors and good psychiatrists. I have access to medication, and I have insurance to pay for it. And we're fortunate that we live in the country where all of that is happening. And I also consider myself very blessed because I'm living now in an era where the stigma of standing up here and saying, you know, I have had a chronic depression and a deep issue since I was in college, and everything I have achieved in my life, my law degree, my career at Aetna, my wonderful son who is 30 years old, I've done all of that with that kind of an illness. But an awful lot of that has been because of the support systems that I have had. There are a lot of young people, particularly in our urban areas, who have the stressors and the triggers to become mentally ill very early, and unfortunately, we really don't have, in this great country of ours, the allocation of resources to this very serious problem. So we at Aetna are trying to do what we can. Depression is a priority for the Aetna Foundation, and we are making grants locally as well as nationally. The mayor has exercised incredible leadership with our mental health task force and homelessness. We know that it is all really related to oftentimes the mental health issues. No one person or institution can solve this problem, but I just put that out there because it is a personal issue for me in terms of the depression, and I can see where if I had not had the kind of support that I've had throughout my life, I too might have wound up as one of the problem people in terms of drugs. And it's important to Aetna as a company, and we're doing our little bit, but it really does take truly a village.
Next, let's hear from Hartford's Chief of Police, Mr. Patrick Harnett. Early in his speech, he does mention Jack Cole, who is the Executive Director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition.
My topic is controlling drugs in the city of Hartford. That's easier said than done. And but we have different sides of the House that are represented here, and in some respects, I was speaking to Jack Cole. I just introduced myself to him in the back, and Jack over here. We can disagree, but we don't have to be disagreeable. And I think that that's the tone of what this conference should be about today. But I want to say that, you know, the Office of National Drug Control Policy, whether it was Democratic or Republican, makes no difference. The policy of the Office of National Drug Control, their first and foremost strategy for dealing with the drug problem in this country has been demand reduction. There's a tendency to think that it's all lock them up and throw the keys away. It's really not that way. The policies have been, you can really break them down into the different categories that. And the first one is demand reduction through education. The second part, phase of dealing with the drug issue is the idea of treatment. And treatment goes at various levels. Treatment also goes to the issue of diversion, and that way you have people involved in drug crime at the lowest level rather than sending them to jail. We should be able to send them through programs, two programs, where they're going to be given an opportunity to rehabilitate themselves. The second, again, all part of this treatment mode, which is a very important part of the national policy is treatment, is that when people kind of hit rock bottom and they need help, that there should be a place where they can go. And what I've seen in Hartford and in every place in this country is that there's lack of enough places. So when someone hits rock bottom and they say, I need a bed, I need help, where can we get that help? And so that's a very important part of what goes on. Another important part of what goes on, and this is again Office of National Drug Control Policy, is that about 80%, almost 80%, or let me say up to 80% of the people that are arrested in urban America, when they are tested, test positive for drugs. That doesn't mean that they're, it means that they've been using drugs in some way, shape, or form. So now we send them off to jail, and if we don't have any programs in the prison system to help people get off drugs, and as part of the treatment process, we come back out, they tend to commit crimes again, they tend to go back to their drug culture, and so it's another way of dealing with the issue, it's another priority, and it's another one of those things that's easier said than done. And last, and it's certainly not least, especially from my perspective, is the idea of drug enforcement. And, you know, some people would argue that it hasn't worked and that we should scrap what we're doing and give up the fight. I vehemently disagree with you. I think there's enforcement that goes on at three levels in this country. It's at the federal level, the state level, and the local level. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the local level, being the local cop. I disagree with those people that say that we should throw the towel in. However, as much as I say that, I also disagree to a large extent the way the drug war, and I don't even like the word war, I don't consider this to be a war. I mean, there's a side of this is that, you know, people are addicted, people are sick, but there's people that profiteer from these things. I don't consider it to be a war. I think it's an issue that we have to deal with, and I think that in many cases in the past, law enforcement has had failed strategies. I think in most places, the success of law enforcement has been based on two things. One, we measured success by how many people we've arrested. And so if we arrested 500 people last year and we arrest 550 people this year, we say we're more successful because we have a 10% increase in arrests. To me, that doesn't mean anything. The second way law enforcement traditionally measures success is to measure how the quantity of drugs that we've recovered. So I call that chasing the kilo fairy.
That night following the conference, I and three others had dinner with Police Chief Harnett, and although there was still plenty that we disagreed upon, we tried our best not to be disagreeable. But the one thing I do feel certain of is that the chief is trying to learn a better way to handle the problem of this drug war. Next, let's hear from Mark Kaczynski, the agent in charge of Hartford's Drug Enforcement Administration office.
DEA, as you may know, obviously is part of the Justice Department. We have here in Connecticut, we have three offices, Hartford, New Haven, and Bridgeport. Obviously, as a federal law enforcement agency, what we do is we're going to enforce the Federal Controlled Substance Act. And we've got, it's what I heard this morning. There's different issues with the drug problem. I couldn't agree more. And as far as the federal perspective is, we certainly have put lately over the last several years, I know under this administration, and that, again, is not my expertise, but we have put a lot of money towards prevention and treatment. And one of the things that I do here in my position as the agent in charge of Hartford is I definitely go out as much as I can, certainly to groups such as this, to schools, community meetings, and I really believe in the demand reduction side, and of course DEA has a division of DEA, which that's all we do is demand reduction. We have agents in every major city here. Our demand reduction agents are in Boston, and they travel throughout New England, and we do believe in demand reduction program. We try and get out there, talk to the young people, talk to the communities, and I think that's really, as I think we've all said, our future is certainly with young people. And I do see, you know, and sometimes I think maybe what gets reported is more negative than positive. I mean, I have seen personally a lot of successes in my 22 years with DEA. I'm not saying that things don't need to be tweaked and fixed a little bit in different areas, but I do see a lot of successes. DEA certainly, if I take it down to the local level here in Hartford, one of the things that DEA does best is we work very closely with our state and local counterparts. And here with Chief Harnett in Hartford and in the surrounding area, might add. I mean, we don't. I heard one of the presenters talking about how we focus everything on the city, and most certainly we have enforcement actions going on in Hartford, but as far as the Hartford resident office, I encompass all of eastern Connecticut and, of course, the Hartford area. And we do our work all around the regions, be it the suburbs, be it the inner city. We certainly look at all the different areas where narcotics are affecting our communities. And we have seen, and we do work cases, we try and we may start at some of the lower levels of drug trafficking in the area, but we have been able to, in many of our investigations in the Hartford area, work things up, actually work things into a national investigation and further it into international investigation as well. Just recently we had one of the techniques that we used that has been very successful, and it was mentioned earlier today, that drugs are a business. There's no doubt about it. It's a business, and as a business, they have to communicate. And one of the areas that we've been very effective in, of course, is interrupting their communications and intercepting their communications. Pretty much everybody today is using a cell phone or using the internet to communicate, and that is the way it is with our drug traffickers as well. And by wiretapping their phones and listening and gathering evidence, in this regard, we're able to really work this local organization, which one of our recent cases here in Hartford did, right through to connections in New York and Los Angeles and actually down to Guatemala as well. And we're able to pass these leads to our counterparts in those cities, DEA, and our state and local task forces. And from that, we not only stop, I believe, a significant source from transporting cocaine into the Hartford area, not just the city of Hartford, but the whole area, but we also took out an entire organization. And that's really where the DEA is focused and has been focused over the last several years, is not on numbers, as Chief Arnett mentioned. I think those of us in the drug business know that the numbers really don't mean anything. It's what we see, what the results are. And that's what we really look to do in the DEA, is what's the result, what is the organization, what is the organization doing in the area, and how do we work it back up to where these drugs are ultimately either coming into the state of Connecticut, as far as my responsibility, or coming into our country. And granted, it's very difficult. One of the things we also do in the DEA, of course, is we do a lot of interdiction work at airports, at bus stations, of course, along our border, be it the Canadian border or the Southwest border. And it's very difficult. Yes, it is. We have a free society here. We do not have the former Soviet Union. We don't have an Iron Curtain. We certainly cannot stop every bit of drugs that come into our country, because we have free trade, and we have obviously consumer goods every day that are flowing across the border. So it is a difficult problem that we do face. And but I think the DEA over the last few years has been very successful in disrupting. I think over last year alone, I think we disrupted over 400 national and international organizations, various different drugs that have been imported and distributed into the United States. And I think as far as our prevention side, demand reduction, we've gotten the word out there. And if you look at, again, you know, I guess we can argue statistics all day, but some of the latest statistics I've seen on the federal level is that we have seen some of the drug usage go down. And can do that I believe in is talking to our young people, talking to our communities with the right information. I think that's one of the things that law enforcement can do, as well as obviously everyone in this room is responsible for that, to get the correct information out there. And obviously young people are going to make their choices, but I think if we get them the correct information, we kind of hope they'll make the right ones.
Okay, we have time for a couple more. Let's hear from Richard Burton with the NAACP.
I'm always inserting something for us to think about as we go through it. And I want you to know, I do not condone wrongness on either side of the wall. Just because I chair the Prison Rights Subcommittee on a national level, I don't condone wrongness on either side. I was called to Cole Township Prison in Pennsylvania a few years ago. Some parents contacted me and said, listen, my sons were beat up by the person that was supposed to guard and protect them. And the worst thing that I saw was what they did after they beat these inmates, all African American men, by the way. They took the blood of the inmates, and on the wall they wrote KKK. Those kinds of conditions exist, and we need to get rid of that.
Next, let's hear from Roger Goodman. He's the director of drug policy for the King County Bar Association. This is a group that's sponsoring on December 1st a conference titled The Exit Strategy from the War on Drugs. Roger Goodman.
So ditch DARE. I mean, that's one big message I have. I don't know if you have DARE in this area. It might feel good, but I call it prevention light. And it's actually a lot worse. There are prevention strategies that do work, and they're evidence-based, and they ought to be applied in the schools and in our communities. Law enforcement has a very important role to play in the schools and with our young, but it's not telling them about drugs. Parents also are not the ones to tell our kids about drugs. The teacher isn't the one to tell our kids about drugs. It's medical professionals who know, or perhaps kids who have had problems themselves. And drugs shouldn't be scare tactics, and it shouldn't be partial or misinformation. It really should be incorporated into the science curriculum. And this is really not happening across the country. 75% to 80% of the school districts in this country still employ the DARE program, even though the evidence shows that it even makes it worse. This is also true for the ad campaigns that the White House Drug Office has spent billions of dollars on. Parents, the anti-drug, or whatever, all these, it's resulted in sort of an attractiveness and earlier experimentation by junior high schoolers than would have happened otherwise. Now, the criminal sanction. What has the criminal sanction done with regard to drug use and drug abuse in this country? We concluded that the criminal sanction has not reduced the incidence of problematic drug use in the United States, particularly among the young, who are now using more and more dangerous substances at younger and younger ages. It has not reduced crime, the crime of possession, the crime of transferring, selling, the crimes associated with the violent black market, and the crimes arising from the pharmacological effect of drugs. Crime has not gone down, even though murder and robbery and all the other biblical crimes have gone down. Drug crime has not. The costs arising from both the use of drugs and crime has not gone down, but has skyrocketed. We can't afford it anymore. A lot of our rural counties are on the verge of bankruptcy because they're just locking everybody up and don't know what to do. Now, there are collateral effects as well. A lot of this has been touched on. I'm going to fast forward through this because I want to talk about what do we do instead. But the collateral effects include this egregious, probably the worst example of the disproportionately adverse effect of drug law enforcement on racial minorities and the poor. Drug use is evenly spread across the population. 72% of illicit drug users are white. And yet, take a look at the prisons, take a look at the jails, take a look at the diversion programs, take a look at who's in the court system. They are poor and they are people of color. And this is not fair. If they were the ones using the drugs and selling the drugs, well, perhaps there would be some proportion, but as we've heard in earlier presentations, there's a terrible disproportionality there. Civil rights are being violated. We now have sort of the Fourth Amendment exception. You can be searched if we think you have drugs on. It used to be you could be searched only if you were a threat of bodily or deadly harm. But now we have the drug exception. You can search a locked container inside of a locked trunk of a car if we think there's drugs. Not if we think that you're a danger to us physically. Public health. Needles are being shared, overdoses. People don't talk about their drug problem with family, friends, doctors. Doctors aren't even qualified to identify signs. There are very few doctors, family docs, pediatricians, addiction specialists, but most doctors really aren't trained in this. Doctors themselves are constrained from practicing medicine competently because the government's breathing down their neck. If they prescribe too much pain medication, they're considered drug dealers. We have millions of people in this country who are in pain, serious pain, and can't get the help they need because doctors are afraid of being seen as drug dealers, and it's happening all over the country. Doctors are being arrested and prosecuted and incarcerated.
I do want to remind you that the change comes from you. You can contact your senator by going to www.senate.gov, your representative by going to house.gov, or you can call toll-free 800-985-8762, or you can go to our website, endprohibition.org. We'll link you up to those that can help. I do want to welcome to the Drug Truth Network our newest affiliate, WFCS in Central Connecticut State University. As always, I remind you, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful. To the Drug Truth Network listeners around the world, on behalf of engineer Philip Guffey, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage and the Unvarnished Truth. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.
Tap dancing on the edge of an abyss.